Welcome to the Seattle Public Library's podcasts of author readings and library events. Library podcasts are brought to you by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation. To learn more about our programs and podcasts, visit our website at www.spl.org. To learn how you can help the Library Foundation support the Seattle Public Library, go to foundation.spl.org.
Hi, everybody. It's nice to see you here tonight. Thanks for being here. I'm Stesha Brandon. I'm the Literature and Humanities Program Manager here at the Seattle Public Library, and I am delighted to welcome you to tonight's showcase of authors from the Seattle Urban Book Expo. Before we get started tonight, I have just a couple of announcements. I would like to thank the Seattle Times for their generous promotional support for library programs, and we are also grateful to our author series sponsor, Gary Kunis. Finally, a big thank you to the Seattle Public Library Foundation. Private gifts to the foundation from thousands of donors help the library provide free programs and services that touch the lives of people in our community. So to Library Foundation donors here with us tonight, thank you very much for your support. Now it is my pleasure to introduce Jeffrey Cheatham II. Jeffrey is the author of two books, The Family Jones and The Eggs of Rex, and Why is Jane So Mad? He is also the founder of the Seattle Urban Book Expo, which will take place this coming Saturday at Washington Hall. Jeffrey is going to talk a little bit about the Seattle Urban Book Expo and then introduce tonight's featured authors, Kenneth Martinez, Nairi Osler, and Shuja Driver. And after the authors read, there's going to be time for your questions, and then the authors will be selling and signing books at the table to your right. So without further ado, please help me welcome the founder of Seattle Urban Book Expo, Jeffrey Cheatham.
Hello, good evening. Thank you all for coming tonight. I appreciate it. Y'all could have been somewhere else, but you guys chose to be here, so thank you so much. It means a lot. I am the founder of the Seattle Urban Book Expo, and what that means to me is an opportunity for authors of color to express their voices and show their worlds for those who are interested, as will be showcased tonight by our featured authors. I started my journey as a writer in 2014 when I self-published my first book, The Family Jones and Eggs of Rex. And the reason I self-published The Family Jones and Eggs of Rex was because of my daughter, my child, or my manager. And how that came about was I went to Barnes & Noble because she was interested in dinosaur books. And I went to the Barnes & Noble to look for a dinosaur book for her, and I couldn't find one. And then I noticed that there weren't too many black or brown kids on the cover of the children's books, so I wanted to write one for her just because of that. So after I published the book, I thought that, you know, once you write a book and you publish it, you just let it out be in the world and it'll do the magic for you. No, I actually had to do some work. So during that time of me trying to promote my book, I was looking for not only people to show my book to, but a community of writers who look like me, who thought like me, who came from the world I came from, and I had a hard time finding them. And I was at a point in my life where I was thinking, do I want to continue doing this? And then I asked myself, did I give this 100%? And I answered no. And then I asked myself, what will happen if you did give this 100%? I was like, okay, let's find out. At that time, I was invited to a book fair out in Toronto, Canada. It was during NBA All-Star Weekend in February in Canada, 11 below zero. It was like, whoa. So I went out there. When I went out there, I just fell in love with not only the city of Canada, but the book fair, because I saw nothing but black and brown authors showcasing their work. And it wasn't just one particular genre. It was science fiction. It was romance. It was erotica. It was children's books. So it wasn't a monolith. And I was like, man. This is so cool. And I was feeling all festive. I'm dancing in the streets. And then when I came back home to Seattle, it just all went away. I was like, aw. And I was like, why am I feeling like that? And I was like, because there isn't like that here in Seattle. And I did my research. We do have great organizations that cater to the African American and Latino community literary scene, but I couldn't find, has there ever been a book expo to cater to that demographic? So I decided to start one. The Seattle Urban Book Expo. And I wanted to, and I created it to give an opportunity for the authors in our communities to connect with the people of our communities to showcase our literary work. The first one I did was in October, And we had 225 people show up for that one out of 8 authors. So it was I like to call it a literary party, because we had music and food there, and it was a great experience. And afterwards, it went by like a bolt of lightning. This went by so fast. After that, everybody kept asking me, when's the next one? When's the next one? I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to do another one. This is one and done. And then my daughter asked me one day, so Daddy, we're going to do the next one. I think for the next one, you should have a bouncy house, or you should have a bouncy pool. And I was like, no, that costs money. And then I was thinking about the next one. And then I challenged myself to not only do this again, but create a better opportunity for more authors in my community to showcase their work in case they feel like I felt when I first started, where I didn't feel like I had nobody to talk to about my creative process, or how do you edit your work, or how do you, like, who would I go to proofread? So not only is, to me, the Seattle Urban Book Expo not just an event, I want to create it to become a lifestyle, where when people come to Seattle, and there are, you know, either Polynesian, Latino, Black, Asian, or whatever, they can come and say, hey, I want to write a book, who would I go to? They'll say SUBE. And they come to a place where they feel welcome regardless of writing level, background, culture, sex. It doesn't matter. If you have something to say, I want SUBE to help you present that to the world. And that's what I hope this Saturday does for whoever comes and supports. They get that vibe from us when they come and see the work that's being put in by everybody who's there, because we have a lot of talented writers that are going to be there on Saturday. And I hope everybody here shows up to the one on Saturday, Washington Hall, August 26th from 1 to 5 p.m. That's why I started the Seattle Urban Book Expo. Now, without further ado, we have a few of the authors who will be there at the Seattle Urban Book Expo who are going to come up and read parts from their stories. And the first one, and I'm going by order of appearance, Kenneth Martinez.
Hi, I'm Kenneth Martinez. I'm one of the members of Seattle Escribe. Seattle Escribe is a community of writers and people developing their writing skills in Spanish. So we are very passionate about promoting creative writing, promoting our language, which is Spanish, and we want to help people that are learning to write, polishing their skills in writing, that are looking for venues to publish. We want to help them all to publish in our native language, which is Hispanic, Spanish. We have a little bit more than 50 people that have joined the group. There is a website, there is a Facebook group, and we all try to help others. The people that have published in this group are very little, but there are many others that just want to improve their skills, that want to be in touch with other writers. Let me tell you a little bit about my personal story. I am from Mexico. I was born in Mexico. I was raised in Mexico. I moved to Seattle just 6 years ago, not that long ago. I am an engineer, but I always had a passion for writing. Ever since I was a little kid, I love reading, I love writing, but my dad didn't think I could actually make any money writing. So I ended up being an engineer, but I always love writing. It's like a passion, it's a need to write. So even though I have a job, I couldn't stop writing. I write short stories, something like tales. And after several years, because I've been writing since, I don't know, middle school, somebody told me that I should publish them because they are well received. So I tried here and there, and after a few unfruitful attempts, I finally was able to publish my first book, Tomu y otros cuentos, which means Tomu and another stories. Tomu is the hero of one of the short stories. I really enjoy what we are promoting here, a venue for everyone to be able to showcase their skills in writing, even in any language, because this is not about English, right? It's in Spanish or in any other language that we are called to write. Thank you for this opportunity. On behalf of Seattle Escribe, thank you for allowing us, showing what Spanish is, to show the richness and the beauty of our language. So now, I'm going to read a little bit one of my stories. I hope you understand Spanish, because it's in Spanish. I'm going to read just a little bit, a couple of pages. Then the name of the short story is called Monday. And is a person, is a guy that is in high school and starts to receive these messages about somebody that wants to kill him. So he received a message that says, hey, you're going to die this way in this date. So it starts to get a little bit darker and trickier. I'm going to read a couple of pages. Lunes. Te mataré. ¿Quién escribió esto? Llego después que el profesor y a regañadientes me deja entrar. Como dicta algo sobre el derecho romano, solo tengo tiempo de tomar mi libreta y escribir. Es hasta que se va cuando veo anotado este mensaje en la paleta de mi banca. Te mataré. Es curioso. Martes. Llego a tiempo. Después de dejar mi mochila en la banca, salgo a entregarle un libro a Miguel. Charlo un momento sobre mujeres fáciles y padres complicados hasta que diviso a la maestra. Entro al salón y es cuando vuelvo a ver mi paleta. Te voy a matar, Kenneth. Frunzo el ceño. Detrás de mí ríe Mariana. ¿Será de mí? Curioso. Miércoles. Vuelvo a llegar tarde. El profesor no me deja entrar y tengo que esperar hasta la siguiente hora para tomar mis encantadoras cátedras. No hay banca donde acostumbro, pero encuentro una en la tercera fila. Cuando voy a sentarme, hago un gesto mustio y me retiro. Es la banca de los recaditos. Te voy a matar, Kenneth. Calle Real, 11. Busco otra. En la última clase, masco chicle. Cuando el sabor se acaba, lo tomo y lo pego debajo del pupitre. ¿Qué es lo que siento? Un papelito doblado. ¿Algo incómodo? Lo extiendo. ¿No entendiste? Te voy a matar, Kenneth. Calle Real, 11. Al instante, lo tiro por la ventana. Si es una broma, comienza a darme gracia porque yo ni remotamente vivo cerca de la calle Real. El bufón debió investigar más. If you are interested in the end, which is about this guy named Kenneth, awkwardly, that somebody wants to kill him, you can continue the story. It's one of the 15 short stories in my book, Tomo y Otros Cuentos. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kenneth. Appreciate it. Thank you. So getting right along, so the next reader who's here by appearance is Nyree Osler.
Hello, my name is Nyree Osler. I was born in California but raised in Seattle, so a local Seattleite. And I, too, have been writing my entire life. Always felt that I had a writing talent, but just last year in October, finally decided to publish my first book. And just wanted to get a feel for if my writing or how I felt I was at writing translated to other people. And I think it did. So from that point, I've also published a second book. And I'm on my way to publishing several more. Before being a writer, I'm actually a reader. And one thing that I dislike is a mundane story that's predictable. I like to have entertainment and spontaneity in stories that I read, and I wanted to give that to readers. So I feel like my book, Retribution, is filled with twists and turns in every chapter and gives you that experience where you're not waiting for something to happen, that something is always happening and the story is pushing you through it rather than pushing yourself through the story. So I'm going to read the premise of Retribution, something we can all relate to, a tumultuous relationship. And the main character is Asaya, and she's going through that with her husband, and she does some things in the book that we might consider doing or be tempted to do but wouldn't, and then there's repercussions for those actions. So it's a tale of love, betrayal, and murder, so a lot of drama in it, but also I think that it has some lessons that we can use in life. So I'm going to read a very dramatic part from my book. James sat in the car with his son, waiting on her to come out of the coffee shop. When she called Stephen and told him that she was having his child, he didn't believe her. James had called back and confirmed what she said, apologizing to the other man for snaking him for his girl. Reluctantly, Stephen agreed to meet up with her and go over how they could either co-parent the little one successfully or raise the baby together. Jay had messed around with many women that were in relationships before, some of them even married. This was the first time he actually regretted doing it. Stephen seemed like a good guy, and he would have definitely loved her and treated her better than Jay would have. He hoped everything would work out for them. About 30 minutes after arriving, she came walking out with a smile on her face. James could tell the meeting must have gone well by her body language. He was eager to find out what the outcome was. As she approached the car, he leaned over and opened the passenger door for her. Two shots rang out, shattering the peaceful sunny day. Jay immediately squeezed between the seats and pulled his son's head down, covering him. When he was sure there would be no more gunfire, he sat up with his own pistol cocked and ready. The scene outside was chaotic as people ran for cover and checked each other for injuries. On the ground outside, she laid on her back. A puddle of blood had formed near her head, and her hazel contacts stared up at the sunny sky. Jay looked down at her one last time. "Damn," he lamented, as he reluctantly closed the door and pulled away. He looked in his rearview mirror just in time to see Steven sitting on the ground with her in his arms. So that was from my first book, Retribution, and then I also have a follow-up to it. And thank you for listening.
Thank you for that. Last but not least, my guy Zachary Driver.
Good evening, y'all. So I began writing my book while I was incarcerated. I was in prison from about 15 to 25 years old, and I just was released 2 years ago here to Seattle. So I say I was birthed into Seattle, because sometimes I see prison as being my mother and like a womb that I was cultivated and created anew inside of. I'm going to read this portion of this book, and then, we'll talk more in the Q&A. I dropped the idea of you and I and reconnected with the consciousness of interdependence, that we are all one. I remember that not too long ago, we were all connected in love, that we were not yet divided by the Maya or the illusions in this world, and that we still saw each other as the beloved. We had agape for each other, and in play and seriousness had spoken about our next upcoming adventure, taking these bodies as vehicles to our destination of purification, education, fun, and enlightenment. We had spoken about the tragic events that we knew we would experience and the joyous occasions that would make it all worth living. We loved on one another because we knew that once embodying this human flesh, we would only see the difference when we looked into each other's new face. We would judge and evaluate and forget that we were all siblings, friends, and lovers. It hurt our hearts to think that we could forget such an amazing and powerful love, a love that existed here in the dark, in the world vibrating at a frequency which was above what we would perceive once we took these bodies. But with love and desire for truth, we made our choice and we came into them. And I remember times when I saw you, or at least it seemed for a split second that I saw you in the male person, that I saw you in the person who came and cleaned up the dishes. I believe I saw you in the president, the judge, even the police officer. I thought that I had seen you, but my mind told me that I had not until now. Now I see you and I remember you. I see you even when you do not see me. And although it hurts when you do not remember me, I can remember the times when we were so in love, the purest and best love ever. The love that was so sweet, so safe, and so warm, where I felt absolute joy in sharing my wild, creative, and vulnerable self. I remember those times, so when you pass me with no acknowledgement, I smile. When you cross the street, when you see me, I smile. When I reflect on the prison sentences that you blessed me with, I smile still. I remember the smile when I reflect on when my earth mother screamed as your fist connected with her face, or when you told me that you wanted a divorce. I smile because I remember our love, and I know that you will remember too. Even when you say you do not want to look for God, I smile because I know one day, even if by accident, you will look inside of yourself and you will find God there, and we will smile together. I heard it once said that it is love that we must aim for. Any great archer knows that if there is any wind in the air, they must compensate for that resistance and gravity as they train their arrow on the target. If they aim directly at the bullseye, the resistance will force the arrow under the target as it decreases in velocity. This means even if ever so slightly, it will still miss the intended target. When we pull back the bowstrings of social change, it is not enough to aim for justice alone. With all the resistance that the forces we oppose provide, if we aim for justice, unfortunately, it is inevitable we will fall short of even that. The great archer takes into consideration the opposing force when they aim the arrow, and they aim above their intended target so that when resistance comes, it actually works in favor of the archer, helping the arrow find its way onto the perfect path, the path the archer had intended it to take all along. Therefore, like the great archers, we must not aim for social justice, we must aim for love. And this way, as we meet our resistance, we smile because we remember our ultimate destination is a place between love, justice, and liberation for all beings on this earth. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And if you guys would be so kind, can I get all the authors to come up here and sit on the hot seat? I mean, the front row. Also, you guys give another round of applause for all the books that were read today. That was. So here's the scary part. Does anybody have any questions? Two reasons, actually three. One, like when I went to the bookstore to look for a dinosaur book for my daughter, I couldn't find one, and I wanted to write one for my daughter over there in the corner. Two, when I came back from college, I was trying to get into the movie business by trying to write. I was trying to write movie scripts. No success whatsoever. So it was. I wanted to have a personal achievement, you know, something that I did, you know, it's like to be proud of myself of. So all those things combined, just the kids' book came out. So that's where that came from.
For me, let's see. My mother actually continued to press me to do it while I was in prison. And I was like, no, Mom, I'm not about to write a book. I'm in prison. Who wants to hear? What story is there to say how to get arrested in 101 steps? Like, you know. But she continued to press me to write and to write and to write and to write. And eventually one day I started doing it. And it was really therapeutic, actually, to sit there and write because I'd been reading for so long, having nothing to do other than lift weights and read books. That when I actually picked up the pen and put it to paper, there was a big release. So I continued to do that. And then I actually shared it with a friend who shared it with one of her friend's sons. And he read part of it, and he's like, you have to finish this. Like this is important. Like, this really moved me. And when I heard that, I was like, all right. Then it really became a mission of mine to finish writing this book.
The reason I'm into writing is because, I don't know. I couldn't not do it. As I mentioned, since I was a kid, I love reading. When I open a book and read a story, it captivates me. It awakens emotions, my imagination. It feels great to be into a book, to be into a story, into a character. So the only thing that I wanted to do is express or try to do the same for others as a book has done for me. So I feel like a force. I feel like a passion. I feel like I need to take a pen and a piece of paper and just start writing to share a story and to try to convey an emotion, a feeling, a sense of awe that other books have done to me.
For me, the decision to write a book was influenced by family members, especially my husband. He's read a lot of my writing over the years and felt like I should publish a book, but I was afraid to put myself out there like that. So eventually, I decided to go ahead and write a book, mainly because I read a string of books that I would start reading and I was too far in to turn back, and then I would get to the end and I would be disappointed. I wanted to write something that would be relatable and have depth to the character. So even though it's for entertainment and fiction, I wanted to be people that you could relate to. That's why I started. I started with the Retribution series because I felt like people closest to me could relate to that series. And from there, I want to branch out. I am branching out and doing different genres, but I wanted to start with urban fiction.
How do you guys feel about writing and being an author?
It's a little bit weird. A couple of weeks ago, they invited me to this Hispanic channel. How is it called? Actitud Latina. It's like a program. And they interviewed me, and I think I was on TV. And they treat me like an author. And I was like, really? Is that me? I guess I'm still not used to the idea that I'm an author. But if I look my name in Google, it's there. So it's real. It's true. And I'm still getting used to the feeling.
It feels really fulfilling. When people read this book, they tell me like how it's transformed them. And I mean, it's people from all different walks of life. And so getting that feedback, or at being an author with this book out and hearing the feedback that comes from people who have read it and have had a relatable experience with it, it's really fulfilling. And like Jeffrey talked about earlier, it's there's a sense of achievement that came with writing something and getting it published.
How do I feel about being a writer? It's dope. Because I look at a writer or author as our job is to create worlds that people can believe in, whether they're real or fake. And the fact that people can invest their time and energy into the worlds that we put on paper is a great responsibility that I enjoy having. And also, it makes me love it even more, the fact that it creates opportunities like this to share my story. So I think it's dope.
Could either of you describe what you believe to be urban drama? What does it mean to you?
For me, urban fiction or urban drama are things that relate to Black and minority culture, and things that can enlighten other people on our culture and can either negate stereotypes or reinforce stereotypes. So that's what I think of as urban fiction, things that we would naturally relate to, and other people might have to determine, okay, what does this mean? But they would learn things about our culture from reading it.
You said it best. I can't follow up. Well, just off the cuff, urban technically means community in a way, but it's a euphemism to describe African Americans and Latinos, though. So I just look at urban as community, and that's why I put it in the name, the Seattle Urban Book Expo, because I'm talking about the Seattle Community Book Expo. That's what it means to me.
Actually, when I heard you ask that question, like, there was a question in my own mind, because I've never actually said I'm an urban person. You know what I mean? Like, that's an exonym. That's a name that someone's placed on me, and I don't know where it even comes from, like community or whatever, but I'm an author. You know what I mean? I'm a whatever title. You could probably tell from what I read, I don't even go with, like, I'm a human being. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's deep for me, but as far as urban goes, that sounds like an exonym that was placed on us. You know what I mean?
So I have a question for the panel. I literally met all you guys this year, which I'm happy about. So calendar year, because we're not 12 months in yet, but we're good. So I wanted to know, is what made you guys to decide that the Seattle Urban Book Expo will be a great opportunity for you to showcase your work, besides me asking?
I just wanted to be with my people. You know, where my people's, that's where I'm going to show up at. And I thought it was a great opportunity, because after meeting you and the vibe that I felt from you, and actually some of the other authors that I know who had actually showed up, Emily, Monty, Rosecourts, and Fred, you know, different authors, they were amped about it, and so I wanted to join in and be part of that community.
So mine, the first book that I had written, it was scheduled to be released October 1st of last year, and lo and behold, I found out there was a Seattle Urban Book Expo on October 1st. So it was kind of like the stars aligned, and I was meant to be there, and so I kind of used it as the launch of my first book. I felt like it was meant to be, is why I ended up in it. And my husband knew Jeff, and it just worked out perfectly. And here I am.
My answer is going to be on behalf of Seattle Escribe. Seattle Escribe actually has like something, like 5 or 6 published authors. And yet, even though they generate some kind of noise in the Hispanic community in Seattle, they are not very well known. I guess because there is just not enough opportunities, or not opportunities for the Hispanic community among like other minorities. So this is a great opportunity for the Hispanic community, for all these published authors. There is Nora Giron, Maria de Lourdes Victoria, myself, to show that there is actually a lot of writing and a lot of publishing in the in the Hispanic community in the Spanish language.
So I wanted to ask, what other authors have influenced you guys to start writing?
So for me personally, the one book that really got me interested in being a writer was Makes Me Want to Holler by Nathan McCall. His autobiography, because his story is pretty much, he grew up in Norfolk, Virginia, and he went through hard times in gang street violence. He got locked up and ended up being a reporter for the Washington Post. I thought that was a dope story. Also, the autobiography of Malcolm X, told through Alex Haley. Is it told or through or by? But y'all know what I'm talking about. that was an interesting story as well. I love it. And also, The Hurricane, the story about Reuben Carter. I just love stories about people overcoming harsh conditions and harsh terms, because it grounds me and it humbles me and makes me realize that I'm not really going through shit. Because we can get in our heads sometimes thinking that we're going through hard stuff, but then you read somebody else's story and you'd be like, what I'm going through is easy compared to this person. Like, Reuben Carter got framed for murder and was in there for like more than 2-3 decades for a crime he didn't commit. How do you remain strong knowing that you're in there because you didn't do something? Like, where does that strength come from? And Nathan McCall, you grow up in the rough streets of Norfolk, Virginia, racism, gang violence, drugs, and you rose above that to become a reporter for the Washington Post. Those stories are dope. And also, my favorite story is The Giver by Lois Lowry. So, very childhood story. So those are the books that influenced me to really look at writing, too. And also professional wrestling as well. Did it. So.
One of my favorite authors is Terry McMillan. And the last time I was actually in this room, I came where she was doing a reading. So it's weird that I did a reading where she did one. So I definitely enjoy her books. Ironically, I don't really read a lot of urban fiction. I read a lot of self-help books and things like that. So I don't have a favorite author per se. I like to read a variety of things. So whatever interests me at the moment, I typically read about that. And it just so happened that I wrote in this genre, but my plan is not to be pigeonholed into one genre.
How has the political climate influenced what you think about in terms of how you want to communicate with your audience and what you want to say? Are you taking more risks because of it?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a quote that says, until the lion learns to write, the story will always glorify the hunter. And I feel like it absolutely resonates with my community. You know what I mean? For so many years, even recently, actually, there was a textbook that was put out in the Texas, I want to say, middle schools that said that there was no slaves, that they were just migrant workers. And so, you know, until we start sharing our stories and telling folks whatever identity you have, our truth, and really pushing our truth, I'll refer to a Sanskrit term, satyagraha, which means truth in motion, or the force of the truth. It was something, a pillar that Gandhi moved from. And so he would say, yes, like, this is a peaceful, nonviolent movement. And at the same time, the truth is the truth. And if you're oppressing someone, then we're going to stand with that in action, not just, you know, armchair philosophizing or intellectualizing real events that are happening in the community and in the streets. So for me, this and opportunities where I can go and teach yoga in my community, where I can talk to folks and share whatever education or knowledge that I have and learn from them, and we can collectively grow together, I'm all about it.
From the Hispanic perspective, in this political climate, there has been like a lot of finger pointing at us. But I need to say, I we cannot truly compare to what the Afro-American community has experienced. So I cannot be in the same boat. We have experienced some backlash, but this is very recent, and I just cannot know what you guys experienced and going through and all that. But from the Hispanic perspective, there has been like a few talks in this group, Cierra Lo Escribe. What we want to do is showcase that the Hispanic community provides value to America. We want to showcase that we provide beauty and culture and respect, and that this society is better with us in it. With our language, with our traditions, with our history, we want to show that Hispanics enrich this country. So we don't want to fight. We don't want to attack. We don't want to get into the lower side. We just want to rise and showcase what we're capable of.
How is that reflected in your art differently? Do you feel like you're taking more risk to say what you want to say, or do you feel like you need to take cover because of the political?
I personally, in the things that I'm writing, in the talks that I am having, I am personally taking more risk because I live in the great nation of Seattle, where like there is a lot of support. But I don't know what I could do if I were in some other city or in another state. Right now, I want to be a voice and support what the Hispanic community is going through in all the country. But I, at least personally, it's because I feel I am protected and safe in this city and in this state.
So for me, the political climate has had a big influence on my writing. I've decided that my next story should focus on a social issue. So what I'm currently working on, we have the side of minority men being racially profiled or disproportionately victimized by police brutality. And then we have the side of the police who are the police, and sometimes they're in fear and sometimes they're discriminating. So one side that doesn't get told is the side of the black police officer. So he's from our community, yet he's on this team. So my next story that I'm working on is coming from that point of view and the struggles that this officer goes through in their life dealing with that situation and also having a job working with the people that his community feels are victimizing them.
As a children's book author, my responsibility is representation through imagery. And also to realize that we are all in the fight together, because every time you see something go down, it's just not just black people out there. It's not just Latinos. It's not just white. It's not just Asians. It's all of us. So that means there needs to be a conversation that we all need to have, an honest, brutal conversation on where we stand, what's going on in the country or in the world today. But to answer your question directly about how I look at what my art is, imagery and representation, and not just pigeonholing the lifestyle that I see as being an African-American male only being relegated to one side. Because one of the major reasons why I wanted to write children's books is when I did see children's books with black and brown kids on it, it was always took place in New York, in the country, or in a rural countryside somewhere, or it had something to do with slavery or civil rights. And my biggest question is, we can't fight warlocks. We can't deal with dinosaurs. We can't find a mystical world underneath our beds. Yeah, we can. But I wanted to challenge myself to not only showcase that, but make sure the story was of quality, though, so that people could understand what I was trying to say with representation with my kids' books.
We have time for one more question, if there is one.
To be honest, my inspiration comes from readers, and their feedback on my work lets me know what I need to improve on, what they feel about my work, or what they want to see next, what they enjoyed, did not enjoy. So daily feedback that I receive from people that have read my work is very inspiring. I remember after my first book, I said, I'll write a book, put it out, and just leave it there. Then people started saying, when's part two coming out? So I said, let me write part two. And so then part two's out, and then people say, so I'm just waiting on part three. So I feel like readers push me to keep going. So as long as they keep asking, I'll keep writing. We get up to part 200, we'll still be going.
My inspiration comes from reading. I love reading. I read all kind of authors, all kind of genre. I read approximately a book a week, and I get my inspiration from all those books.
I resonate with what the sister said, hearing feedback about what the book has helped people with is definitely one. But then as far as like motivation to continue writing, for me it's definitely yoga. Asana practice and just getting deep into the philosophy and wanting to share that with people in a kind of like in a coded way in what I write.
So I have two motivations. One is my daughter. She's one. And the second one is I want to create an environment where everybody respects each other because everybody understands each other. Best way to understand somebody is by learning about them, and the best way to learn about somebody is by reading about them. So if I can create literary work where it makes somebody who doesn't know about the Black community, and they read my book and they want to know more about that side of it, I feel like I've accomplished something. So it's just a community that I want to live in personally, where everybody respects each other. Everybody, we don't have to get along, because that's impossible, everybody getting along. But if we respect one another, that would take us a long way. So that's where my motivation comes from.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. Thank you for coming. The authors will be signing books right over here. And and you can chat and mingle and learn more about how to get books published. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys.
This podcast was presented by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation and made possible by your contributions to the Seattle Public Library Foundation. Thanks for listening.